Hi, this is comedian Mary Santora, and you're listening to The Default Setting with Jess Falstick and Elizabeth Seaman. Enjoy.
Welcome to The Default Setting, where we find out what makes you tick because we have ways of making you talk. I'm your host, Jess Falstick.
And I'm your co-host of this award-winning podcast, Elizabeth
Seaman.
You know when I gave that award speech, I forgot to say my own name?
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
Oh, good Lord Almighty. Well,
but I still keep getting feedback that I had the best speech of the night.
Good. Yeah. We'll get to that. I want to really quickly introduce our hilarious guest who I have just met today, but she sounds like she is absolutely fucking up the Cleveland comedy scene. Miss Katie Moynihan, how are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me, you guys. I'm excited.
Thanks for being on. Your default setting is Grin and Bear It.
Yeah.
Grin and Bear It. I love that. Do you want to dive a little bit more into why you think that's sort of what you default to?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it probably has like a lot to do with like how I was brought up and just like, I don't know, my family always like, you know, put your best foot forward kind of thing. And like a little bit of like an image thing too, I guess. Like, you know, when you go to church, we clean up, we look nice. But like in reality, did my parents have like the best marriage? No, like all that kind of stuff is just kind of hidden, but you kind of like grin and bear it and like get through it. Even if it's not totally pretty as you think it might be.
So it sounds like, in some regards, it's kind of a way to cope, but also a kind of way to handle, like to kind of like, ride the storm out sort of thing.
Right, exactly. No, I totally agree.
Do you have a distinct memory of when you first kind of noticed like, oh, okay, I'm gonna just buckle power down and try to power through this?
I don't really know if I ever really realized it until honestly, like when I got into my 20s. Mm-hmm. And that's when I really started feeling depressed, and I like didn't really know why, because I didn't really have a reason to be depressed. But I didn't want, like, really to share it with the world or, like, kind of, like, go to people with my problems. I kind of was like, oh, it's probably just, like, my period or something, you know? Yeah. I'm sure I'm fine. But then, like, it was just getting worse and worse where I was like, I don't want to get out of bed. I don't want to do anything. I put on, like, a lot of, like, extra weight, and I just wasn't, like, taking care of myself. So, I don't know. I guess kind of at that point, I knew I had to, like, get through it, but I wanted to also like change and do things I don't know, to just like put like a better version of myself out there, even though maybe I didn't feel the best. So yeah.
So did you find that like sort of putting on, I don't want to say a facade because that makes it sound like, but like, you know, putting on an image where that you were feeling, making people believe you felt better than how you actually felt. Would that be an accurate description of kind of what?
Yeah, I would totally agree.
Okay.
Trying to do a fake it till you make it thing. Like,
yeah.
If I keep acting like everything's okay, maybe it'll start being okay.
Exactly.
Sure. I've definitely read weirdo like memes and things on the internet where, and I mean, there's probably some credit to this. I don't know. But they talk about if you just smile, it actually like it triggers like things in your brain that's like, it's supposed to make you like want to smile. I'm pretty sure it was probably written by one of those dudes who just tell us to smile all the time.
Oh, I hate those people. Yeah.
I swear to God, I cannot go to a Giant Eagle with a Salvation Army dude like shaking it, like with ringing the bell at Christmas without them telling me to smile. And I'm just like, fuck you.
Yeah. Like, what?
Salvation Army doesn't even like fucking anti-gay rights motherfucker.
Oh, really? We've just gone down on like, I had no
sorry.
Idea.
No, that's
no, I'm going to learn about that later. It's
yeah, kind of fuck the Salvation Army.
They do good things for neighborhoods, but like, you got to hate on gays though? Come on.
Fuck those bell ringing bastards.
It just gives you another reason to not smile at them when they tell you to.
I really want to. I've started taking notes, so I'm really going to write this down because I really want to talk about that later. So, but yeah, like, fuck. See, I'm still high from last night, so I'm going to have like, the memory of a goldfish. I was telling Katie and Liz before we started the show, I went to a 420 show last night. The funniest thing, too, is I felt really bad. They had a stand-up comedian come out at one point. Oh, and they had, like, the panel, you know, doing jokes. But they would do callbacks. We didn't remember what the fuck happened 10 seconds ago.
Yeah,
so what happened at the beginning of a two-hour show, you are just, that's no. not going to work for anybody.
No way.
And the guy that did stand-up, he's actually pretty relatively well-known, Wayne Fetterman. But he basically bombed because we were all just kind of like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, none of us laughed.
Smiling and nodding.
Smiling like, and nodding, and nobody's
laughing. Yeah. Everyone's just like, uh-huh.
One of the panelists actually said, she's like, I keep thinking I'm bombing, but then I look out of the crowd, and everyone's just so happy, but just no one's laughing. Like, just everyone's super happy. She's like, this is the best bomb I've ever had. Like, it's not an angry bomb.
Looks like the most friendly bomb.
It's not an angry bomb. Yeah, but, like, the whole idea of forcing yourself to smile, like I used to have a joke about that because like it seems weird to me that a random stranger would come up to you and just ask you to make a facial command or a facial expression on command, you know, like if I walk up to you and I'm like grimace, you know what I mean, like that's just such a weird thing. So did you, I mean, like, was it because of, you were kind of talking about that upbringing of keeping an image, presenting an image to sort of the outside world, that gave you that idea to sort of put on that face to deal with the world?
Yeah, I think so. Like, just seeing, like, my parents and, like, their marriage was, like, a disaster, but, like, I don't think that really showed to, like, people who are on the outside. And it certainly, like, affected me and my brother, who, like, grew up in that environment. But it was also, too, probably that, like, time where, like, I don't know, just everyone was, like, getting divorced. Like, wasn't the divorce rate, like, 51% or
something? So it was like, okay.
Right. Like, probably everyone has,
yeah,
like,
so what about what year would you say, what, did your parents get divorced?
So they got divorced, it was, like, 10 years ago, so it was probably 2009.
Okay, yeah, my parents was like more like 2001. That was a great year.
Right.
My parents got divorced. My mom moved out. I had to change schools. And then September 11th happened.
Everyone blame Elizabeth Seaman for 9/11. Yeah. Don't blame Barack Obama. Blame
it was Seaman. It was my bad luck that was going on that time.
Oh, shoot. How do I turn this off? Sorry. Do you guys know if there's a way to, like,
pause? I'm guessing I'm not going to have to edit this episode nearly as much as I've had to the last two episodes. So.
Okay, good.
Yeah. I support chaos in all its forms until it becomes racially, sexually, or otherwise insensitive.
Yeah. I just, like, I feel like, I don't know why when it comes to, like, a computer, I'm, like, retarded. But, like, on my phone, I can, like, take over the world.
Right.
But I have a computer, and I'm like, what the fuck is a keyboard?
Well, and that's what's funny. I think that's most people nowadays, because you really do. You use your phone way more than you use computers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's people growing up with more touchscreen stuff, because I know one of the things that I learned when I was doing my master's is, like, how people interact with things. So dealing, like, our generation, like, growing up with computers is one thing, because we're used, when you interact with a computer, you're using, like, a mouse, you're using a cursor, you're using, like,
right.
There's something between you and what you're interacting with. And that's why a lot of times, like, kids and older people, they're better with touch screens, because they can interact, like, directly with what they want to,
like,
do.
Hands-on kind
of. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
So I think it's just naturally, I think people are better with touch,
like, a human trait or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that, because my law firm recently upgraded to the newest version of Windows and Office, and everything is made for touchscreens in the newest version. Like, everything's larger, like the icons and all that stuff. And people lost their damn minds. At least people who are, like, the age, like, like, our parents to, like, just above, like Gen X, like, Gen X to boomers, that, like, that completely flipped them the hell out, because, like, they were just used to everything being, like, small.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm severely praying, because that's it. Like, I work with, like, the generation above us. I severely pray that we don't ever have those days, but I know we will. That's the thing. It's inevitable. Like, something's going to freak us out, and we're going to hate it, and our kids.
But I mean, in all fairness, we grew up, like, using technology that we're used to changing constantly. So, man, there should probably be a point where we're like, again with this, but at the same time, like, I don't know. I think we're a little more well prepared. Because, like, in my I remember having computer classes in grade school. I mean, yeah, they were like the Macs with the floppy disk, like the size of your face.
Oh, yeah.
And you just play like Oregon Trail. Yay, but then it switched to like
Mavis
Peak and typing and all that stuff, and then learn how to use Excel. And I'm like, yeah, we'll get over it. We'll be fine.
So when you decided, like, about how long were you in were you feeling depressed before you decided to kind of see if you could sort of grin and bear it or grit your way through it? What was the catalyst?
I guess, so like after college, getting out of college and then like starting a job and being like independent, that was like, okay, like an adjustment, because you're going from like that college life to like, okay, now we're like in the real world. Like,
yeah, your friends all around and
yeah,
skip a class or two.
Right. So like that was still like, you know, a weird transition, but then it was like probably when I was like 2017, so probably like 23, 24, when I was just like, oh my God, am I just going to like work at this, you know, office desk job the rest of my life and then die? Like, is this what my life is?
Existential crisis.
The quarter life crisis. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like people talking about like how I should save for retirement. I'm like, this is horrible. Like,
yeah.
And so then I was just like, I don't know, kind of started unfolding. I was just getting into this like depression of just like life and like, why am I here and what am I doing here and like, what's the point?
But stuff like that makes you spiral.
Right. And then I started, you know, going to a therapist, and I saw her like every other week. So that was good. That was helpful. And then she kind of helped me. She's super spiritual, which kind of like awoke a more spiritual side of me, which I've always kind of believed in God, and I grew up Catholic. So I've always had that in my life, but like during college kind of like grew away. Like once my parents got divorced, I was like, oh, like, fuck the church and God and whatever. Like, I didn't really have like a religion. And then, kind of came back to like religion and spirituality, and that kind of, I don't know, rewired my brain a little bit. And I was like, okay, so there is a reason we're here. There is something bigger than us. And like, I mean, not everyone believes that, but it was just,
yeah, but if it makes you feel better,
yeah,
then who gives a fuck? Like, that's what it feels like. I feel like with most, like, you know, religions and stuff, it's just like, well, if that's what they want to believe and they're not hurting anybody, like, how does that fucking hurt you?
Right.
It makes, I wish that more people could feel that way, because it seems like it would be, like, super comforting to have that kind of mentality.
100%. Because I think if you have something that helps you that, A, doesn't hurt anybody else, and B, you in no way, shape, or form try to force upon other people, I think everyone should just do it. Like, ultimately, like,
yeah,
that's, I don't quite get the whole, I mean, I understand the principle behind it, but like sort of the idea that you sort of have to recruit other people into whatever this is that's your thing. I understand the need to want to kind of be supported by people, and I also understand the need for specifically the church to financially rack up a lot of followers, but yeah, I think it sucks that something that's meant to help people has been turned into ultimately such a weird,
oh, I know,
a weird thing. Yeah. But that's awesome. But
there's also the differences between like spirit being like spiritual and religious, or, you know, like there's a whole gradient in there too.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think that's fantastic though, that was something that helped you. It does kind of sound like what's awesome too is that you were aware enough, it sounded like, to get help to go see, like, you know, a therapist.
Yeah. And I did do therapy before with my mom, because our relationship was so terrible when I was like at that age of like 16. We just weren't communicating and just like constantly fighting. So going to therapy with her, honestly, like, now she's like one of my best friends, and I'll call her like every day. So like without my mom, I don't know what I would do. But yeah, just like being that teenager, and then also like your parents are, you know, in this horrible divorce, and then, you know, they're still trying to be authoritative, but you're like,
oh yeah,
well, I'm leaving in 2 years. Like, so
yeah,
cool. Like, wow.
Tell me what to do.
I know what I'm talking about. I'm 17. Like, okay.
Yeah, I remember like smoking out of spite. Like, I fucking dare you to come out here and tell me how to live my life. Let's talk about your life choices.
Like, I was such an asshole as a teenager, but
yeah.
But that's really cool that your parents like instill that like therapy is a good answer and it's like a fully acceptable way to deal with issues. Because there's a lot of like cultures and just people in general who are totally against it, and it's not even like it's their fault. It's, you know, societal pressures and everything like that. But it's nice when people don't have to deal with that.
Yeah. I think also too, being female, I don't know, like, I think a lot of guys, I don't think, maybe feel comfortable talking about kind of that stuff and emotions.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, I tell my brother all the time, I'm like, you should definitely like start talking to someone when you're ready or whatever. But like, even guys like need to see a therapist and like talk it out.
Definitely. You know? And it's nice because nowadays there's so many different like ways to do it. Like my friend's boyfriend, he does like the online stuff because that's what just works good for him because he's more of a homebody and he doesn't need to necessarily go out. And, you know, you can have Skype sessions or there's people who could just email or, you know, like there's so many different ways to go about it.
Right.
Yeah. It's also amazing that you and your mom decided to do therapy. I think I think maybe because I don't know if it's just because I'm like 10 to 15 years older, like just back then I don't think it was prioritized as much, like therapy is concerned, because I also grew up Catholic. Liz, you did too, right?
Yep.
Okay, so like I feel like maybe we all have sort of similar experiences in the regard that like my mom and I had a horrible relationship, like just it was God awful. But exactly to your point, I could not live without my mom now. Like, she is my best friend. We talk all the time. Like, you know, we just, I couldn't live without her. And I think it's just, like I said, it's really cool that you guys took the steps to sort of to remedy that, because so many people, I think, just think this is how it has to be. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be that. With regard to your depression, does it sound like it's pretty well managed at this point? It's just kind of day-to-day? Yeah.
I think so. Like, I did try antidepressants, which I don't know, like, too much about prescriptions and stuff. Like, for me, like, I definitely think they can help. I don't think that's really, like, what I needed to do, but I kind of wanted to try it just to, like, see. And it was, like, kind of not hard at all. So, like, like, hey, can I get some antidepressants? They're like, here you go. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, you can get them for your general practitioner. A lot of people don't know that.
They don't really, like, they don't ask you a lot of questions. So I was like, okay. so I did that for, like, a few months, but then I was like, I don't really think I need these. So I think, too, as far as, like, my mood, I mean, there's always going to be, like, good days and bad days. You're never going to be, like, 100% happy all the time. But I noticed, like, when I'm eating healthy and taking care of myself and exercising, like, those things, like, make my mood better than, like, any other thing. And, of course, like, good sleep and everything and taking care of yourself. But, yeah, like, exercising, like, boxing, I, like, love to just, like, punch something. I'm like, oh, yeah, this feels really good.
It's so cathartic. I took karate for 2 semesters in college. Oh my God.
Oh God.
It was so great because I was one of the few girls in the class, because I think most of the women were like my mom's age and they were just kind of there for the credit. But like, you also had the option of like coming in after class to like just do spar sessions with people that were kind of on your level.
Oh my God. I'd be so nervous.
And they were always guys. And I was always just like, fuck yes, because I grew up like a tomboy and would just beat the shit out of my brother and my cousins and like all that. And so, yeah, I still have, I can feel them, I still have dents on my shins from where I would just like just nail these guys repeatedly, like, you know, obviously incorrectly because my shins shouldn't have been hitting their shins, but it was so cathartic. Like, it was just so much fun. And the thing was, like, I wasn't really hurting them, but at the same time, they were like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, you know, they were still getting thrown off by,
like, I didn't expect you to come at me like
how much I was wailing on them, you know, and I was lucky too, because a lot of those guys, you know, they took me seriously. It wasn't just kind of like, okay. And they were like holding my head while I was swinging at them or anything like that. But yeah, so you make a really good point too. Like, I think exercise and sleep, those are two huge things for me to help with.
Well, I think part of it, like a big part of it, because some people, they like to be like, oh, you know, this is the way to do it or that's the way to do it. I think it's really like you need to go at it like on all sides. You know, come at it, because a lot of people, they're like, I don't want to take pills because, well, it's not just about taking pills, or it's not just about going to therapy, and it's right. not just about taking care of yourself. It's like the more you can, if you, as long as you can find that kind of like trifecta combo.
Yeah. Well, everything,
I think that's what makes like the real difference. Yeah. yeah.
Every single person is going to need something yeah. different for themselves. Cause no one is exactly the same.
Right.
Yeah. And the internet's always like shows a picture of trees. This is medicine. Like pills, this is medicine.
Yeah, like, download this meditation app. It's like, fuck you. I'm going to go punch something.
Like, yeah. Like I'm just going to sit here and breathe about it. And I'm going to feel amazing.
But like so many people like swear by meditation. So it's like, it's so weird, but like every single person has a different thing to get through it. And
yeah, it's about like trying.
Know whatever you're going through, you're gonna get through it, and you just gotta figure it out.
I love the term "breathe about it." I just want to use that all the time. Well, and so what's funny? You guys talk about meditation. Obviously, it is a huge deal out here.
No doubt.
And the thing I was telling my therapist, because she was like, "Oh, you should try meditation. You should try yoga." And I was like, "I really don't want to. Like, I really don't fucking. I don't want to be like. I don't have that kind of time. Like, that's the thing. Yeah. And the other thing is like, my brain just it won't shut off. Like, I don't have trouble sleeping or anything, but in general, if I'm just laying or sitting. My brain's just, it's doing something all the time.
Yeah. Well, you know what I find, like, I'm not a person who, like, meditates regularly or anything like that, but I found, like, a free one or two that's to put on when you go to sleep. Oh. And I kind of like that because it's like the, it's just like a relaxation technique. And then it has kind of like a, like nice messages at the end, but you know, you just fall asleep. So it's like, you're laying there anyway. And it helps you shut your brain off and just kind of like, you know, get out all your tension from the day.
That's good.
Like a little nice message at the end. So like, I'm down for that kind of stuff, but I can't sit still.
Yeah.
I can't even watch a movie anymore without dicking around on my phone. Like, it's so annoying. I'm like, I suck.
Someone tweeted.
Like, just do one thing at a time.
Someone tweeted the other day, if you're able to sit through a half hour long TV show without looking at your phone, it should count as a book or something like that. Like,
it's just, I was literally, before we came on, I was watching Death at a Funeral. It's on Amazon Prime now. It's a really good movie. And I'm so still like playing this little Tetris game. Like, doo, doo, doo. I love this movie. Oh, if you love it so much, why don't you watch it?
I have to hide my phone sometimes or turn it off or make it hard for me just to pick it up and do shit with it.
Sometimes like if you put on the subtitles, you end up like have your eyes on the screen more.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. My phone's not going off. I'm not getting notifications. No one's talking to me. I'm just looking at it.
Yeah, I'm like, well, I'm sitting still. And I got Wi-Fi, so I guess I'll just...
Exactly.
Yeah, I guess I'll
just stare. I don't know what it is about. Like, I think they linked, like, the light up and the notifications and shit, like, to a part of our brain that also lights up when we do coke, I think. Like, it's just, it's very,
like endorphins and stuff.
Instant gratification.
Exactly. So, yeah, I have to, like, hide my phone or turn it off. Or, my boyfriend is the infinitely most patient person because we'll be watching something and I'll be on my phone and realize I missed, like, 10 minutes and I'll be like... Rewind. I'll be like, didn't we just watch this? I'm like, yeah, I wasn't paying attention and I really just needed to.
I feel like my boyfriend's the same way, except we try to watch something and he always puts it on at night.
Oh,
I'm like,
sleeping.
Okay, so I'm gonna watch this video. I'm gonna watch this TV show. Let's watch it. And I'm gonna fall asleep at the end. You wanna watch another one? Totally. can we watch that again? Do you want me to just give you my password? I want it together. Oh, you don't want to watch it for the fourth time because I can't stay awake. We should put on things when the sun is up.
That is a great point. And like, and I think you made a great point too about the captions. I literally watch everything with captions now because I don't know.
It keeps your focus.
Yeah.
Like, that's smart. Yeah.
And you don't miss the things that they're saying.
Plus, either. I just have a hard time with the way I think audio is on most digital programming now. Like, the music's so fucking loud! And then you gotta turn it down, but then you can't hear what anybody's saying when the dialogue comes back. And
So that
is very good. It sounds like you are living a healthier, happier life.
Than or that's the face she's putting forward.
Or
this is all scam.
Dun dun dun.
Wearing a garbage bag as pants.
And the green screen behind you will just fall down, and there's just a pile of garbage. Like, it's not a beautiful house.
There's a dumpster. From what we can see, but like the floor is covered.
It's just like a trash can. With, like,
it's like adult diapers all in that area. You can't see it, but
it's just not. It's like a fast food garbage rug.
You like get up to go get something, you slip on a tomato. Just all out of control.
A little paper rustle.
A rat runs by. He's like, oh, that's just James. He's cool.
Yeah.
He's chill. We have an understanding.
He's got a family now, so that's nice.
Oh my god, that's great. So in other senses, I mean, have you found yourself like through on a more day-to-day minor level having to sort of grit to get through things?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it too is like, I mean, there's like so many different things that I do. It's like, I kind of probably sound like a crazy person, but talking to myself and just saying like, because I think a lot of people have different like love languages. I don't know if this is connected at all with what I'm about to say, but like, I have to constantly tell myself that I'm awesome. Like, so funny.
No, I've heard a lot of people say like they do that kind of stuff, like those positive affirmations.
Yeah, exactly. Like I like it too when people like tell me I'm awesome. So now it's kind of like, okay, instead of like going to someone or having to fill that hole in a like another relationship and getting that from someone, you can just give it to yourself.
Yeah.
So I'm constantly like, oh, like self-compassion, that's a huge one for me, because like I would always like negative talk and say mean things to myself, but I didn't even know I was doing it. So like when I mess up or do something wrong, it's like, okay, Katie, like, yeah, you probably shouldn't have done that, but like, let's see like the positives and like, let's get better. Like, don't worry about like beating yourself up because you're not perfect. Like, no one's going to be perfect. No one is perfect. So
that's great. That's a big deal, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you hear a lot of people say that, but it's a very hard thing to actually do. You know what I mean? Like, you can say all day long, like, it's, I'm going to be positive and I'm going to be, but I think it really is like a lot of really hard things, a way of life to sort of, you know, not just tell yourself, but actually believe that you are enough. Like, I would say that was one of the biggest turning points in my life, when you realize like you are, again, it sounds cliche, but you are all truly, you are all you really need in this world.
Exactly. Like,
and, and I think what's really sort of cool about that is that other people can sense when you've sort of achieved that level of like comfort within yourself, which then ironically makes more people want to be around you, makes more people want to support you. So even though you don't need them, it's nice to have, you know what I mean? So yeah, so I definitely think that that's a fantastic sort of philosophy.
And I think too, without that, like, I don't think I would have been able to do comedy or be good at it or be decent at it.
I was gonna say, it sounds like it would be a game changer mentality.
Without getting to know myself and without believing in myself, like, standing on stage telling jokes is, like, ridiculously hard. Like, it's, like, not, like, anyone can do it. But a lot of people do, but it's, like, you can tell when you really are, like, someone's being true to themselves and authentic, and, like, when someone, you know, I think the audience is more intuitive than people, give them credit for, so... I think definitely going through what I had to go through and then like starting comedy, I was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, I would have never, like 2 or 3 years ago, I would have never gotten on a stage with a microphone. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that's such a good point. And, and what's interesting is I think I had that same turning point about the time after I went through a depression. And I'm not saying everybody needs to go through a depression.
Yeah.
But hey, if you're gonna, the great thing about it is you have a lot of self-realization. And like I said, you very much get to a place where you realize like there was a time when all you had was yourself and you got through it and holy shit, like I could still survive because, you know, I got through that. And again, I think that mentality very much, you have to, as you're talking about it, this might be like leftover Jess high brain talking, but I started thinking about, just the interesting dichotomy, right? So like you said, the biggest thing about being a stand-up, at least as a female, is you really do have to have the confidence in yourself. I mean, you're going to have nights where you're like, I fucking suck and I'm never going to do this again. But if you have the overall foundational confidence, you keep coming back, right? You keep doing it, you work to get better, and you believe in yourself. Flip side, if you're female and you don't have that, and I've seen this many times, I've seen very funny women get up on stage, perform 2 or 3 times, And if they don't absolutely kill, or they saw somebody in the audience look at them the wrong way, they're like, that's it, I'm done, I can't do this anymore.
Oh yeah, like a little thing makes them fall apart.
Quit, absolutely quit the whole comedy scene. And it always breaks my heart, because then you have guys. Then you have guys. And the ironic thing is, you'll often hear about how many male comics absolutely fucking hate themselves, but they're still some of the funniest people.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
can't explain what it is about the idea, and maybe it's a different sort of self-hate. It's not the same sort of self-hate that we have, but like, dudes can right. hate themselves, and you almost never know, or if you do, that's what makes it funny. Or or they can hate themselves and they go up there and they're just not fucking funny, like
right. at
all. I think usually with that, it's like it's usually like two different things, because there's the people who say they hate themselves, but they're also narcissists.
Okay.
So it's like, I hate right. myself, but like, I love all this.
Because, like, the narcissist like needs like to feel like they're important through like
exactly.
other ways.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, yeah. So it's like you have the self-loathing narcissist, and then you also have the guys who they're used to people listening or not listening and being able to say whatever they want sure. just because that's how they're socialized as guys, not to necessarily have that like humility or like the, you know, self-awareness to yeah. know if they're doing well or not. So it's like, it kind of gives you like a dumb power through. It's not like a smile and power through. It's just like, I don't care.
Yeah. Like that's yeah. the thing I know we've talked about a million times on here, but always makes me so sad, is just the idea that like, as women, one of our biggest assets is that we try to be aware of ourselves, right? Which I think is yeah. an amazing quality to have, but it ends up slipping down the slope into self-awareness, into self-consciousness. And then yeah. it becomes like no longer about like, not only am I aware, but now I'm like overanalyzing every single little thing that's wrong, versus right. so many men are not self-aware, and because they don't really, you know, I mean, maybe it's just because ultimately they don't really have to be. And then they end up, even when yeah. they suck, staying in comedy, versus like we end up quitting because we get so like down on ourselves. So mm-hmm. again, to have a true sort of feeling of like, yeah, I'm going to have rough nights, and yeah, I'm going to have nights where I yell at myself and tell myself I'm terrible. But if you still truly overall believe like I'm legitimately going to be good at this someday, or I'm legitimately good at it now and we'll get better, that's the key, really. I do think yeah. there's a teeny bit of delusion you have to do to yourself. Like, I still, to this day, yeah. one of my favorite yeah. Mike Birbiglia sketches, he sort of ends with the fact that, like, you know, to be a comedian, you have to lie to yourself and tell yourself that went great, because if you believe every single night what is actually true, which is most people don't like you, like, you know what I mean? Then you're just going to want to die and never do this stuff again. So that's really good. I'm guessing you decided to get onto the comedy scene fairly recently, right?
Yeah, so it's been like 6 months, I think, that I've been in it. And there was like a period where I think I took like 2 weeks of just doing no like comedy at all. So I just kind of felt like, ooh, you know, came out guns a-blazing, like kind of got like burnt out there for a second. Because like the cool thing about Cleveland comedy is like there's so many shows and there's so many cool things you can do. And I was just doing like multiple shows a week, and it was like awesome. And I was like, this is fun. But also like I'm stressing myself out, because I'm like, oh, these people are asking me to come here so that I can perform, and like, what if I don't feel like performing that night, you know? So it's kind of like I started getting in my head a little bit, so I took like 2 weeks to just like relax. But yeah, I think it's all about balance, but I love it, and it's like so much fun, and it's just like such a great feeling when you are on stage and you get like a bunch of like
yeah.
a whole crowd is laughing. You're like, oh yeah.
I've never tried heroin, but I cannot imagine it's better. Like, I can't imagine it's a better feeling.
Right.
What was it that sort of got
cheaper?
Yeah. What was it? Comedy kills about as many people, but
yeah.
ironically, by heroin usually. When were you sort of thinking about dabbling in like getting into the comedy scene?
I think so. October was when I first went on stage, but before that, I had like a long commute at my the firm I worked at before, and I would just like. Well, first of all, my boss was awful and I hated it. So it was like horrible. And then on my commute home, it turned into me just like talking to myself, like about the day and how awful it was.
Yep.
And I would just talk out loud. And then I would start talking and be like, oh, that's actually kind of funny. So then I would like start recording myself talking. And
that's
then it's
awesome.
Kind of like, spiraled into something. And then I started like writing actual jokes. But it was honestly just like me venting and me like de-stressing from my day and being like, this guy's a fucking prick. And then like kind of like what you really want to say to your boss, but you can't say it to his face.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I was like, oh, this is funny.
That's one of the coolest origin stories I've heard so far, because I definitely relate to it from that perspective. It reminds me a lot of too of the Key and Peele anger translator. Like, you're just in there like, here are the things I wish I could have said, but this is what I said instead. Right. I love that. You said you worked for a firm?
Yeah, so I studied architecture. That's what I went to school for. And I'm actually working on getting my architecture license.
Wow.
So, hell yeah.
I know, I'm taking in my exams. I actually just passed my first exam yesterday.
Woo, nice. Congrats. Congratulations.
Thank you. I have 5 more to go.
Okay. My friend's boyfriend is doing that too.
Oh, really? To get yeah. license? Oh, yeah. It's a pain in the butt. But it's kind of like one of those things where I'm like, okay, I'm so early on in comedy, and like, I mean, it takes years and years and years of hard work in comedy to do anything. So it's like, well, while I'm like, you know, figuring out what that's going to become, maybe I get my architecture license just so like if I need to just be an architect, then that's what I have to do. But I don't know. Comedy's right now for me just like so much fun. And it's just like something I enjoy other than just like having to wake up and like go work as like a slave. What's it called? A wage slave. That's like what they call it. Anyone who has like a job they don't like. So yeah, I don't know. It's cool though.
Yeah. I mean, you make a really good point too about, kind of like, you know, we all have our career path goals, you know, and then,
right.
and then we have comedy. And what's funny is every day, like, so I actually haven't done any comedy since I left Cleveland for the most part.
Okay.
But really what I always wanted to do was act. And since there wasn't a lot of opportunity for it, that's how I got into like the comedy scene.
Okay.
But out here I've been, you know, tons of opportunity for acting. And I have some days where I'm like, like, what if I don't make it? What if I'm not good at it? What if I suck at it? And I'm like, oh, right, I have a job, like, that's kind of a career that, you know, I can kind of, you know, and I don't think everybody should necessarily adopt, you know, the safety net mentality, but
that doesn't work as well for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, some people need to do it without a safety net. Some people need to do it with one.
Sure.
Right.
Exactly. And I think that's a great point. I mean, architect is like a fucking phenomenal job. I was just sitting here thinking, I'm like, does that technically count as STEM because it's engineering? I don't actually know if that's part of STEM. You guys know STEM?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've heard of it.
Yeah. So like science, technology, is it engineering and then math?
Okay.
So I always get really excited when like other women, because I'm in technology, sort of like that. And so I think architects probably, I'm going to say it's part of engineering. It's in there. That's really, and that's badass.
Yeah. And don't put yourself like in one category. Like if you want to be like an architect or technology or whatever, and a comedian and an actress
absolutely.
And a model and a whatever, like, and a dog walker, like you can do like, I think this day and age, it's so cool because, like, our parents, I mean, not everyone, but for the most part, like, had a job, had something they did, and that was, like, kind of what defined them. But our generation, it's like people are doing so much. Like, you guys have a podcast. You also have jobs. You also do comedy acting. So it's like we shouldn't just say, oh, I have to do this one
thing.
Sure.
Like, people have more opportunities to be, like, multifaceted people.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's encouraging to me because I don't know, just me, it stresses me out, this whole concept of like, if you want to become an actor, you want to become a comedian, you have to like ditch everything else and just pour everything into this thing. That gives me so much anxiety because it's like, yeah, but then how do I pay my fucking bills? Well, that's what everybody struggles with. Yeah, but I don't want to struggle. Do I have to struggle?
Yeah, that's a, like, I don't think you have to.
Yeah, like, does that have to be me? Do I have to be the person who just like literally leaves it all for the dream, you know what I mean?
Well, that's what, so some people like it like without the safety net because they need that like motivation to really like get out there and get paid in the ways that they want to, which is, you know, like, and if that works for them, that's fine, but like I know myself and that would make me nuts.
And I think too, like, a lot of people like that kind of like hero story of like, oh, I, you know, left everything. I had nothing. I lived on a porch. And then
in my car.
And it's like those stories are so cool because they're super rewarding if you can do that and go from like 0 to 100. Like, cool. But Yeah,
but also some people like running water.
Yeah. I like to eat.
I like regular showers and stuff.
I like
that's me. That's my origin story. It's going to include bathing on a regular basis.
I like eating and occasionally leaving my house. So both of those things. Yeah. So no, but I'm glad you brought that up. It's just kind of making that balance. Have you found so far that like you're happy with this not being a hobby necessarily, but an activity to sort of work on and sort of focus on as a potential primary thing?
Yeah, I think I'm happy with how it is right now, and like doing it like pretty regularly, I think is like a good plan, like at least like once a week, if not more. And if, you know, if I can't do it, then I can't do it that week. But for the most part, it's just like, yeah, it's like it's my passion. It's what I enjoy. And it's like cool if I can get better and better at it and write funnier and funnier jokes. Cause right now I have like one joke that's just like funny, but like, I mean, all my jokes are funny, but like this one joke, I'm like, oh, that's awesome. And I'm like, no, I don't want to just do one joke for the rest of my life.
Well, but that's one of the things that like I was learning, like when I started in Cleveland comedy, like I thought I had to have like almost a completely new set, like every single time I performed, but I was just hearing everyone else say the same thing over and over and over and over, like everywhere I went. And I'm like, what's the thing? What do I do? Is that the thing? You just keep doing that? When you do something else, like
new material.
That is the hardest thing. Yeah, because so Cleveland comedy scene, and if you are a loyal listener of this podcast, you're either in it or you've heard all about it. But ultimately,
or you're my mom.
Yeah, or you're Elizabeth's mom. My dad might be on the podcast in a couple weeks. FYI, that's gonna be my dad's like a Vietnam vet and. He's going to be 70, he's an infinitely fascinating person. So, like, the Cleveland comedy scene, even with the limited amount of experience I have with it out here, I would say, is unique in that it's very large, considering the size of the city. It's very well established. What's really funny is, this was bizarre, so I have a friend I made in acting class out here, and I was hanging out with her last night, and a woman that lives in her building we were up on the roof on their like it's a shared rooftop deck, and she was like, oh hey, so she introduces me to this woman, and I was like, yeah, I'm from Cleveland, and she's like, oh, I know one from Cleveland. I'm like, oh yeah? She was like, yeah, he's a comedian. And I was like,
oh.
Ew. I was like, there's absolutely no way I don't know this person.
Right.
Because it is a big scene, but if you go out 3 to 4 nights a week, you know everybody, right? Like, everybody who is active in the scene.
Yeah.
And so I said, what's his name? And she's like, oh, I mean, you're probably not going to know him. His name's Ramon. And I was like, Ramon Rivas?
Yeah.
So who doesn't
know him? I was like, but what's really crazy is, you know, she's from, like, Toronto. She has no idea, like, what the Cleveland scene is like. And so I tell her, I was like, wait, Ramon Rivas? And she stops and she was like, you know who that is? And I was like, there's 8 million people in the city, right? Like, what are the odds that this person? So I thought that was insane. But then what I was telling her is that, you know, honestly, everyone's got, you know, their own thoughts about him, but I can honestly say that there wouldn't be a scene without him. I mean, he literally built, there was existing people who did comedy and were comedians, but like he built the shows that started and the open mics and sort of all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. He really established a vast majority of what's going on around there right now.
Oh, cool.
And I'm thankful because, you know, like I said, at the time I came in, if it had all just kind of been, sporadic and sort of scattered, I don't know that I would have pursued if there wasn't that much going on. You know, I don't know that I would have pursued it. And that's the great thing about it, is it really is easy to cultivate, your performances and your jokes and everything, with there being so many rooms, so many showcases, so many open mics, having Funny Stop in Akron, which isn't far, and it's a club that will let anybody basically go up and give you that club experience, you know. Have you done Funny Stop yet, Katie?
I haven't. I have to get down there. I know, like, they say, like, the material, like, has to be a little bit on, like, the cleaner side and, like, kind of, like,
mostly, no cursing.
Just, you can't say fuck. You can't say pussy.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not supposed to say pussy.
Yeah, don't say fuck. Don't say pussy. I think you're not supposed to say dick, but people do. And that's really it. I mean, you could.
Then I should be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is we were just talking about. We were talking to. Do you know Dan Brady?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were talking to him on the show a couple weeks ago, and I actually. So Funny Stop does these things where if you if you get into the top 10 of performances, you get to host a show, and then you and then you have to bring the like you have to book the line, like bring the comedians that are going to perform.
Yeah, for like another amateur show competition.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, so like I did a show where I had to host, and I brought Dan along with Katie O'Malley and a couple other people, and it was both Katie and Dan's first times at Funny Stop, so they're like, hey, you know. What are the rules? And I was like, well, you kind of have to not swear. And they were like, oh no. And I was like, no, you can't say fuck. You can't say pussy. Dan, I'll never forget. Dan's like, but I could talk about abortion though, right? And I was like, yeah, actually, yes. You cannot say pussy or fuck, but you can talk about abortion all day long. Like there's no topic restrictions.
I think the first time I was there, I may have said fuck like four times.
Yeah, and actually, it was funny.
And I made it to the next round, so I don't know
how exactly.
I think it's like a case by case basis. Sometimes.
Yeah, you must just have a voice for it. You make it sound good.
It's definitely not consistently enforced. I think between the fact that half the time, the owner Pete, who you need to meet and just understand.
Okay.
That whole thing. he if he's not in the room. You know, nobody's gonna come up with a hook and like you off stage. So usually, if he's in the room and you're dropping, you know, P bombs and F bombs, he might yell at the back of the room, or he'll come say something to you later. But there's definitely been times I've seen him in the room. I think he was even in the room when Elizabeth said fuck like four times, and he didn't care. Like, I think it really just depends too on like whether he likes you or whether he thinks he's very
context.
Yeah, he's very foreign. He has very limited vocabulary. So if he tells you like you are very bad, it doesn't mean you're really bad. He just doesn't really know how else to say like you need to work. Like it's just
subtlety.
Sorry, we went kind of on a rabbit hole. But the one thing I will say about having that community where everybody knows each other and sees each other all the time is what you guys were talking about, and that's ultimately the fact that like. It gets so hard seeing the same sets and same jokes and same this and same that. The only thing...
Well, and then a lot of shows, there's, like, all comedians, too, because you're like, so you're not necessarily getting the best feedback.
Right.
Because it is a group of people who have seen your shit over and over again. I mean, there's still people like Amber Mehta when she tells her sugar daddy joke. Like, I fucking will die every single time. But that's, you know, it's just not something that happens that you can do for everybody.
Right.
I will genuinely laugh every time at that. It corrects me.
Well, and that brings up another good point, which is this is the hardest. That was the hardest thing for me was getting proper feedback because, you know, you have a million shows, right? But the audience in what, like probably 60% of those shows is almost always exclusively other comedians. So
at least the majority.
Yeah. So like when people are laughing, there's a very big difference between what comedians find funny and what the general public finds funny, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So it's hard to get an accurate gauge of feedback when you're mostly performing for other comedians, too, so.
Yeah. And I'll write a joke and be like, oh, this part's, like, really funny. This is really going to get them going. And then they laugh at, like, a totally different part. I'm like, what? That's not even the funny part.
you missed it.
I know, and then sometimes you're just thankful they laughed at all, but then other times you're like, you're mad because you're like, I don't know if like you found this, but like jokes that you that are like your babies, or you're like, this is the funniest one, and people don't laugh. You're like, you're all stupid. Like you're all just. I get so mad.
No, well, that's what I was gonna say. Is like I don't really care, but like I don't like it when comedians are like they try to tell the audience like when to laugh. Like I get it. Like sometimes they need a hint, but they're like. Oh, you guys aren't supposed to laugh at this part. It's like, dude, you're getting laughs. Don't, like, tell people to stop laughing because now they're, like, afraid to laugh because, God forbid,
you're
going to
yell at them.
Like, don't be an idiot. Like, let them laugh whatever they want
to
laugh
at. They wanted to get entertained, not boss around. Like,
right. You know. See, people do sometimes do that.
I know exactly what you mean. And that always feels really uncomfortable to me when, like, someone's laughing really hard at a joke and the comedian's like, calm down there, buddy. It's not that funny. And it's like, no, I will take I will eat up every single.
Let them do it.
I guess some of them, they do it because they'll hope that they'll get, like, an extra laugh or something, you know, like,
oh, gotcha.
To put that out there. But
I don't know.
But then there's like other comedians who like someone from the audience shouts out one thing and it wasn't even like a full on heckle or anything. But then they'll just like
target.
They keep drilling hole about it, like keep targeting it. I'm like, well, all right, well, fuck you too. And it's like, oh dear. Oh wow. Okay.
I imagine there'll be
a little sensitive.
Yeah. There'll be someday where like if you end up, I guess, performing, touring enough, maybe a lot, you'll start to get really annoyed. That's my only guess, is that you're after a while, you're okay. Just kind of like, people shut the hell up.
Right. I mean, it could be, but it just seems a little bit like that's what starts to make people uncomfortable. Sure. Like now everyone's a little like awkward because you're clear, because sometimes they're clearly like very upset.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh okay.
I remember the first time I saw Amy Schumer, it was at Just for Laughs Festival, and this was like 7 years ago. It was so cool because she was just coming up then. And so it was a super small venue. But I remember it was like one of the many times that I was at a comedy show and kind of felt afraid, because the thing was, she had like this laser vision for if somebody was on their phone, she would stop the whole show and she'd be like, hey, yeah, you, yeah, I see you're on your phone. You want to share? Like, what? Am I boring you? I'm sorry. And like, and then like, there'd be times where like, if I were high or something like that, I'd be, you know, I was watching her and I wouldn't, like, I was right up front. So like, if I wouldn't laugh, she definitely was noticing people who weren't laughing. Maybe they were just sitting there and smiling, and she was like, oh, I'm sorry, am I not entertaining to you? And I'm just like, I just felt I was under, like, I needed to be like constantly laughing. Like, I didn't want to
I know. And that would have been one of those things. Maybe it was just like, people caught her on a bad day or something, or maybe that's like how she is. But it's like, aren't you supposed to be entertaining the crowd and not like, like you said, bossing around or critiquing them? Like, I don't know, it's kind of weird.
And I definitely get it. Like, it can be especially frustrating when you feel like you're up there sweating your balls off, working on a bit that you've been working on for weeks, and you look over the room and there's people just like.
Right.
Like, that's really annoying.
But I mean, for every like one person that's looking at their phone, there's got to be at least.
You're right.
Especially like in a room that big, there's got to be like 5-10 people not looking at their phones.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, and then they're the ones who are suffering. So you're making the people who are actually paying attention like.
Yeah, and I like too, like a lot of Bill Squire shows around here, and like they're good at announcing before it starts, like, hey guys, like, don't be on your phone, like, don't heckle the comedians, like, kind of like stuff like that. Just it's like it's a nice thing to just mention to the audience, just so they remember like what a common courtesy is.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. Don't get it.
Not that they always remember, but at least if you throw out a disclaimer, like to start.
Yeah,
you can get a little head start.
At least you covered your bases a little bit. It does. It depends on the room too. Like, you'll hear us bitch about Avenue Tap House and just how that place was.
Oh, okay.
On Earth and. It really does depend on the room and the people that are in it and all that kind of stuff. But you're right. I think unless someone is being – someone posted the other day, I think it was T.M. Francis, who's a comedian down in Kent, was posting about – what did he say? He was trying to compare stripping to stand-up comedy and how, like, stripping has more dignity. Which I was like it absolutely does. And furthermore, when someone as a stripper starts being shitty to you on stage, a giant man will come and take them away, whereas you just have to stand there and deal with it when all your clothes are on. And I don't think there's really any level of, like, people can talk all day about acting and music and all that stuff, and those things are hard, don't get me wrong, I'm not poo-pooing them. But you, nowhere are you under as much like live active scrutiny as you are in comedy. Yeah. Like, in no other entertainment form do people feel like it is an acceptable form of behavior to scream things at you, to yell at you, to throw things at you. Like,
it's even with, you know, like with music, or if you're saying a monologue, or if it's like a little poetry sesh, like, no one's like gonna start shouting out advice to you in the middle of your shit. Like, no, they don't start heckling you just for like existing up there.
Be a better guitar player. Play the drums louder.
Freebird.
God, if someone yelled Freebird at me, I would take that to heart. Like, just I would always say Freebird over Be Funnier. So it sounds like the comedy is going well. It sounds like your architect stuff's going
well. She's killing it out here. She's doing great.
Lighting it up.
Everyone loves it.
It's
true. true.
Well, what else is going on? I wrote some shit down. Oh, you guys are talking about, I did not know this, that's the Salvation Army. What is up with the Salvation Army?
I mean, double check me on this, but I'm pretty sure that it's kind of like a Chick-fil-A
thing. I was going to ask, yeah.
Yeah, because they're like a religious type. I think it's Catholics. And like you said, they do great stuff for, you know, neighborhoods. And like in where I grew up, they have like a rec center type thing. Yeah. For the kids and stuff, but I thought that they gave money to anti-LGBT stuff.
I want to know, Jess, how long have you lived in Los Angeles?
So April 1st, it was 8 months.
Yeah, was it last August you moved?
Yeah,
out
it was technically I got here like July 26th. So it's late July, early August.
Oh, cool.
I've had. Everybody says it's a love-hate city, and I can't think of a better way to describe it. It's
Yeah, I was going to say, I've only been there, like, once, and it was, like, actually a business trip, but I ended up meeting up with my mom's cousin, who's, like, a 50-year-old bachelor, like, never married, no kids, and, like, probably dates, like, all these, like, hot women, but I went out with, like, him and his friends. They're all, like, middle-aged, so they're, like, in their 40s, and they're like, you should move here. Like, this was, like, way before I ever did comedy or anything like that, but it was just so funny how, like, it's kind of like, I don't know, my experience, it was like almost like a cult. Like they're like,
that doesn't sound inaccurate.
What's funny is that I
need more people.
As Liz can attest, every time I talk to anybody and they say, you know, oh, I might move to LA, I'm like, yes, please come out here. Yes.
friends,
well, because friends. Here's the thing, like ultimately, like my boyfriend and I have concluded, and this can always change, but we've effectively concluded, like, we love the weather and the scenery infinite things.
There's so
to
much
do.
To do.
Infinite things. Which, by the way, Liz, last night my boyfriend, or Adam, was like, hey, have you heard about this, like, Sawtelle Little Japan neighborhood? And I was like,
where do you think we were?
We took Elizabeth there. When
we went.
He's like, wait, are you sure?
Remember when I said, hey, let's go back? I went there, and then I was telling you guys we should go to that, like, Japanese dollar
and
store.
And we did.
He was there, too.
I know. We smoke a lot of marijuana. This is what happens.
Oh, my God.
This is what happens when it's legal and it's not $400 an ounce like it is there in Ohio, apparently. But
that sounds amazing, though. But, yeah, I, like, love that. I love that city, but I can totally see, like, the love-hate aspect, like you were saying.
It would be
like,
great if there were no people. Like, it would be amazing if there were just, like, if there was just a Thanos instant where he just, like, came in and, like, cut it all in half. Like, it would be so much better. And that's the thing, like, ultimately, we don't want to move home to Ohio for anything about Ohio specific. If we ever came home, it would literally just be because we want you guys to be here. Like, then we have everything, you know what I mean? Like, we have everybody we love, and we have, you know, our weather, and we have the scenery and all that shit. So it's funny because literally, like, AJ DeCosmo was on here a couple weeks ago. He was talking about moving to LA. I was like, yes, come out here. Here's a list of things you should do. Here's where you should go. Like, I keep...
Jess, you're coming off desperate, man.
Well, and like,
I'm not going to come to you like that. Didn't you, like... Come on.
I mean, honestly, it's and again, I think it's like a first year thing too, that you know, definitely. You just want, like, you don't know many people, so you want the people you already know and have established relationships kind of out here too. But but I highly recommend for anybody who does really want to become a writer, performer, either New York, LA, Chicago are really your best bets. And really the biggest reason I picked LA is just for the weather, just because I couldn't handle
it. Oh my gosh. I would, I'm over it.
I'm over the snow, but I also like it when it rains sometimes though. So I think I might get, like, annoyed with that much sun.
Right. It's always sunny. Yeah.
I actually noticed that about out here is that I got really – I was over sun. And so, like, days where there it would be cloudy or rainy, like, rare days, I was just kind of like, this is cozy and nice. But then over the winter, they got the most rain they had in, like, 6, 7, 8 years this last winter.
Okay.
So there were, I think, from, like – I want to say the end of October through basically the beginning of March, it almost rained nonstop. Like, it would rain like 4 to 5 days out of the week. It would usually rain. And it's been great from the perspective of, like, now, like, there are amazing flowers everywhere, and
there are so many flowers. Okay, that's another. When I came out in August when Jess moved, because I brought one of their cats, Sad Face with Pumpkin Eyes. also known as Soma. And I brought her out, and we were just like, I got there in like the next day or something. We just took a walk, and there's fucking flowers everywhere. Trees and flowers.
Butterflies.
So many different kinds of palm trees.
Yeah.
There were so many. I never knew that there were so many different kinds of palm trees.
Yeah. And that was one of the first things I noticed, is I was like, holy shit, just around our apartment, there's like 8 different kinds of palm trees. I had no idea there were like,
and lots of like trees with flowers, and I don't know. It's so like nice and colorful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, beautiful place to live if it weren't for all the people. If you're ever considering it, I keep saying, if I get enough people out here, we can just start a neighborhood called Little Cleveland. And we can just call it Little Cleveland, and we'll make pierogies. And
I would totally make,
oh my god, Elizabeth, oh my god. All right, I'm so mad. I was this close to turning around and driving back and taking a picture. There was a guy this morning walking down the sidewalk.
Uh-huh.
On my life, I swear, it wasn't the high thing. He was on the sidewalk. He had a t-shirt that had Chief Wahoo on it, and I swear to god, underneath it, like, it had wording, and I was like, does this say keep the chief? What does this say? And I like pulled up. It was at a stoplight. It was in like Israeli or something, like underneath.
Oh my
god. Chief Wahoo. And I was like, I need to get a photo of this so people believe that I actually saw it, and they can tell, maybe somebody can tell me like what it means. But like, then I'd already driven past him, and I was like, do I really want to turn back around and then drive past this guy with my phone? But yeah, like, we were talking about the
whole nice and creeped out. Well, it's funny because there's different things. Like, when I was living in Japan, there was like random, like, okay, so you're in downtown Osaka in like this little like mall area, and you go into the store with all these cute little clothes, and one of the like stacks of shirts is all like Miami Dolphins t-shirts. Like,
oh wow.
Why?
So random.
Where did this come? Why?
It was like a misprint, and they just ship them off to like...
Yeah, but it was like a women's store too, like all these like tiny shirts. Like, and then I'm pretty sure I saw somebody like with the Chief Wahoo hat on and stuff while I was there, just in passing. It's one of those things, just like, you just want to talk to them. Like, who are you? Why are you here? Why I'm here?
What's your deal?
You.
Well, Miss Katie, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So do you have anything, this is going to air this week, because at this point, we're just, we don't even have them in the chamber anymore. We're just producing
them. Yeah, knock them out.
So anything you got coming up this week after when this airs Thursday, feel free if you've got anything to talk about.
So I do have something that starts, I'm starting to host actually at Around the Corner at the end of the month on Monday.
That's great.
I'm excited for that. I'll start hosting at the end of the month. And then I think once we get into like the warmer weather, we're going to go to the patio.
Perfect.
And do some outdoor comedy. Great. So definitely people should check that show out on Mondays at Around the Corner in Lakewood. I think like 9 or 10 o'clock start, yep. But I'm excited to host that. That'll be my first time like hosting a regular show.
Yay.
So I think that'll be super fun. But other than that, I think just like usually Facebook, I post most of my like upcoming stuff. And then, I mean, I don't really know what I'm doing on Instagram. I'm just like on there.
That's Liz.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes I post something like once every 6 months.
Right. You know, once every like 3 months, you're going to get a random picture.
Yeah. Like, do I want to post a thirst trap? Do I want to post something enlightening? Like, I don't fucking know.
I do think that's why people switch back and forth between, like, posting and doing the stories on Instagram. Because, like, like, the thirst trappy stuff, that, you know, that'll go away in 24 hours. But, like, you know, then the stuff you really want to remember, you can have, like...
Yeah, you
know,
how you really want to look on the app.
This is the stuff that I want to stay, like, a library.
Exactly. Well, awesome. Everybody check out Katie Moynihan, K-A-T-Y... Moynihan. Thank you for putting your name in the Zoom app here so I could actually spell that.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Oh, so when you're hosting, are you going to be hosting both the open mic and the showcases on Monday nights that are around the corner?
I think so. Yeah. So I think that'll be, whatever. Does it like alternate, or is it usually the open mic is after?
So this
the
is new. Yeah. So Spider, I finally encouraged, because it's a weekly showcase, which are very hard to fill, you know? Like, I actually realized with the number of shows that we have at SX Coin Entertainment, we're filling about 50 spots a month. So,
Okay.
And so, just to kind of get a good repertoire of my boyfriend's miming things at me, which that was what that was. So, just to get a good, like, you know, group of different people in there. The Catullus, it's just really hard to get not the same six people every week. So, which is, you know, it's hard on, you know, everybody to have to hear the same five people every week. So, third Sunday, or I'm sorry, the third Monday of every month now will be the open mic. But what I really want is I really want to have, like, I want to have follow-up calls with you, like, on after those weeks to ask you, like, how open mic went, just because I'm curious to see if, like, what your experience is with the showcases versus the open mics and just
The first time that we did an open mic there, it got, like, that was the busiest it had been.
Right.
So that's why it turns into, it's like a, it's a mixed bag, but Spider will just bitch about them all the time. I hate open mics.
I know.
Scramble, I'm a honey.
It's so true, though. Like, it took us...
Give me my pizza rolls.
It's so true, because, like, it took us forever to convince him. But I think Around the Corner specifically requested that they start doing open mics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because we'd have people coming in all the time who were, like, new, you know, like, people who I don't think have ever performed before, like, asking if they could go up. And we're like, well, it's a showcase. So, I mean, like, if you just email us. So, you know, like, telling them ways to do it. But I think it's kind of like, you know, they maybe have the liquid courage right then or something.
Exactly.
But it does seem like the open mics get more traffic sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, there's already, like, two on Monday because there's the, you know, the...
Tacotanas.
Yeah, Tacotanas and the Duck Island.
Oh, right. So, see?
So, I mean, but they're all at different times, so...
You're not overlapping.
You know, around the corners, but in the middle.
We have a patio.
I like that. You're like, well, ours has patio. I love that. That's great. So, yeah, check her out. Liz, is there anything you want to promote? Anything you got going?
Meh.
As per usual.
You know, just on this award-winning podcast. Standard.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I didn't actually get to hear your speech. Did anybody record your award?
I don't think so.
Best speech ever of the whole night. And it was the first one. And she ended with, suck a mean dick.
Yes. I'll tell you. So here's the story.
Yeah.
So we got there. And so I was sitting next to, like, James and Wilson, who do Teach These Devils, who won last year. Totally thought they were going to win again. Them or, like, Drinks with Larry, so I'm just like, we're not going to win. So, you know, they start the show, and it comes up, like, podcast is the first award. I'm like, oh, we're just starting. I thought they were going to start with something, you know, maybe a little low-key, you know, lower-key, just a little more chill. And they read them off, and then they said, and the winner is the default setting. And I just sat there. I said, what? Like, I'm at the default setting. I'm like, hey. And then James turned around, he has this big smile on, he's like, you won! And I was just like, what? And then I got up. And then, and of course, I'm sitting, like, all the way towards the back, so I go all the way up the aisle and on to the stage. And then I got up there, and the first thing I said, the Hanley Trophy, and I was like, what the fuck? That was the opening line.
That was the opening line.
Was what the fuck? Because I only had something just so vaguely planned out.
I'm glad you had something. That's good.
So, yeah. So I was like, oh, you know, I want to thank our network and, you know, OK Pants. And then I said, you know, Gigi, I think she's out there. Turns out she wasn't. No. I thought she was going to be there. She wasn't. So like that, I'm like, I want to thank Jess because, you know, for having just a genuine, like, empathetic and curious, like, nature to, like, know more about our fellow comedians and creatives and put the show together. You know, I never said my own name. I never said myself at all. I'm just this random. Everyone knows.
Yeah.
They didn't say my name. Like, they didn't say, these are the hosts. It was, I have no idea. So then, and then I just said, and suck a mean dick. Thank you very much.
I loved it.
That was my favorite because you texted me and you're like, we won. And I'm like at work and I'm just like, ah. And then you're like.
I was so high. Like the adrenaline was insane.
I thought you meant you were actually high.
There was no drugs. There were no drugs. I don't really do drugs at all. But I was just like. Holy shit, I am just, like, wired now.
Yeah.
Well, and then it's funny because I get that text, and then you're like, I told everyone to suck our dicks. And I was like, oh, no, we're not going to win next year now. And
I'm like, no, I think there's more points to us winning because the speech was so good.
Well, and then...
like, I want to hear more from her.
And then I got a notification on Instagram that Amber had tagged us in something, and I look at it, and it was like... a picture of you giving the speech and the caption just says, suck a mean dick. And I was like, oh, okay, so she really did. She said that. That's great.
you know. And then afterwards, I get to hear him like, best speech. I'm like, well, yeah, you know, everyone else was normal, so.
Yeah, I'm actually glad you did speech, because I would have been all, like, humble.
Sticks out when you're being weird.
Yeah, mine would have been all, like, humble and emotional and annoying, and yours was probably, like, way more entertaining.
Well, I think I was just in shock. Like, I just was like, I was still, obviously, I went up there and said, what the fuck, again. I'm standing here. So, you know, my first time on main stage at Hilarities, and I told everyone to suck a mean dick.
Perfect.
In front of, like, the whole, you know, it's just, like, all
the Cleveland
of our
comedy community that nominated us, that actually nominated
that nominated and voted for us, and suck, I'm just like, suck it. Thank you very much. I did end it with thank you.
And then you did curtsy, like,
the
thank
second.
You.
Yeah.
Well, that's suck it. That's thank fantastic. You thank you for, thank you to everyone who listens to the show, everyone who voted, everyone who nominated us. Thank you guys so much. I think the real trick to it was really just having everybody who is going to be voting for us on the show, and either at some point getting them high, getting them drunk, feeding them, and or just generally letting them talk about themselves for an hour, so.
I mean, but isn't that what, like, all the other shows do, too?
True.
So
James' show is definitely...
Don't downplay us. Come on.
Stop making excuses. Me being I'm just trying to be humble. Like, oh, we're not...
No,
we're
that's not being humble. Humility,
man. Humility.
We were the best. The end.
I don't disagree. I think we both could be right about that. So if you want, you can follow us on Facebook at The Default Setting Pod, I believe is what our Facebook is, because apparently all the other default setting versions of a Facebook URL were taken. You can also follow us at SX1 Entertainment. I believe April 7th? That's today. Is it today that Couch Gags is going on? Because we had to move it?
Yep.
Well, F. So you can't go to that. But next month, I believe it is on May 19th. Yes, May 19th. Yeah. Sunday, May 19th, 7 p.m., Couch Gags. I know, Katie, you've been on that a few times. Hopefully you've had a good time at that.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I love that spot. It's, like, such a cool little, like, so different. Like, different than any other room because of just the decor.
Motorcycle garage.
I was upset we didn't get nominated.
Yeah, I was a little
for
surprised
that
about that. Hard for, I think, a lot of us, just, like, the three of us kind of have to run this, and we're all in, like, you know, different places, and that's just... And I think...
Yeah. Spider doesn't have a vehicle as of yet.
And I think a hard thing, too, is it's an amazing venue. What's interesting, I think, is out here in L.A., if you told people, oh, my God, I'm running a comedy show out of a garage, it might seem a little cliche, but ultimately people would be like, I gotta fucking find, like, that garage and go find these, like, secret comedy shows. And, like, Cleveland people are like... this is hard to find. I don't know where this is.
Yeah, it sounds a lot like work. Where's the parking?
Yeah, it's a struggle. So, but if anyone happens to be in Cleveland and you want to go see a cool, really sort of hipstery, fun little show, it's out in a motorcycle garage where you can bring your own beer and bring your own dogs. So you can definitely check that out.
And I always bring treats for the dogs. Try to get them to
it
be
is
my
a
friend.
Great time. We usually get severely hammered. We had pinatas with penises and alcohol in them last summer, so you never know what's
for the 4th of July.
Yeah, 4th of July. You never know what's going to happen at Couch Gags. But yes, May 19th, 7 p.m. Sunday. I want to thank OK Pants for doing our logo, and I want to thank Above Below Entertainment for being our network. Okay, love you. Bye.